are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, we meet John Martin, an Englishman who's a huge enthusiast for Operation Anthropoid and conducts special tours on the subject in Prague. And then we'll hear from foodie Petra Pospěchová, the author of a successful outdoor cookbook. That's in this week's edition of Czech Life. All that coming up, so do please stay with us. Operation Anthropoid, in which Czechoslovak parachutists assassinated the Nazi governor of Bohemia and Moravia in Prague, was one of the most dramatic events of World War II. The story caught the imagination of Englishman John Martin as a child, and he has devoted much of his life to it ever since. He spoke this week to Ian Willoughby.
Among the credits in the forthcoming movie Anthropoid is Man at Assassination. That man is John Martin, a Liverpudlian who was invited to appear as an extra after several years of correspondence on Operation Anthropoid with the film's director and co-writer Sean Ellis. A stand-up comedian by profession, Martin has for decades been absorbed by the incredibly daring assassination of Nazi governor Reinhard Heydrich by Czechoslovak parachutists Jan Kubiš and Josef Gabčík in Prague in 1942. That passion has led him to write a book on the subject, The Mirror Caught the Sun, and to run annual tours of sites connected to the story for fellow enthusiasts from around the world. I caught up with John Martin this week when he was in Prague for one of those tours.
By profession, I'm a stand-up comedian. That's how I earn my living. I travel the world on cruise ships, done some television and stuff back in the UK. So, yeah, that's my profession. But as a kid, I read a story in a magazine. I grew up in a place called Liverpool, England. And I read this magazine about these people who'd been parachuted in from Great Britain back to their homeland, the Czech lands, and how they'd assassinated this protector, Reinhard Heydrich, and then hid in a church, and then they were betrayed. And this story just jumped from the pages of this magazine and just fascinated me. And even at school, I used to say to the teachers, used to say, what do you want to do? What's your ambition? And I always used to say, my ambition is to see a bend in the road in Prague. I had no idea I'd never left England. I didn't know where it was. I didn't even know where Prague was, really. But I just had this ambition to see this bend in the road. And then in the early 90s, I started coming to Prague. The first time I came, I had real difficulty finding the attack scene, which, as you know, is in Holosovice. And I've just been coming ever since, and I absolutely love it. And so much so that I wrote a book. I wrote a book about the assassination. My book is called The Mirror Caught the Sun, because some believe, and I believe, that was part of the signal that Heydrich's car was approaching, a little hand mirror to catch the rays of the sun. Also, he blew a whistle and various things. But I call my book The Mirror Caught the Sun, because that was the signal Heydrich's car was approaching.
How did you research the book?
I'm always researching. I'm still researching today, and I keep saying, oh, I'm going to write a newer version, a bigger version. You know, I'm not particularly academic. I spent 1 year at the equivalent of a university in England, but then I left to become a stand-up comedian. So I'm not academic or anything. I'm just passionate about the subject. And I did it the hard way. I wrote my book the hard way, just by travelling to see the places, by coming to Prague all the time, to going over to Germany, going over to Slovakia. I'm very friendly with the Gabčík family. Going to Kubiš's home in Dolní Vilimovice. Going to see where Karel Čerda lived. And just making acquaintances like that. So I've befriended a lot of people who certainly remember or were affected by the attack on Heydrich. And possibly the biggest scoop, if you like, that my book has. I was the first person ever to get Heydrich's family to agree to talk in public. Heydrich's son, Heider Heydrich, who of course lived in Panenska Brzezany, I managed to befriend him, went to stay at his house, and he agreed to give an interview and cooperate with my book, which he'd never done before. He'd refused all interviews. And I'm still in contact with him now. We still email. He's become a friend, if you like. But I'm very friendly with the parachutist's family, Valchik's family, I know, Bublik's family. I have friends at the Army Museum. But I've just done it the hard way. I've just gone round and knocked on doors and badgered people. I'm sure there was an easier and better way of doing it. I admire some people who are able to write books from afar, just using archives, without even visiting Prague. I admire them people because that's a great way of doing it. But me, I've had to do it the hard way over many, many years of literally foot slogging every corner, every inch of the city of Prague and other places as well.
Given that the resistance in Prague were warning the exile government in London what would happen, there would be massacres and terrible retaliation, and they were right, do you think the order to assassinate Heydrich was the right thing to do at the time?
I think they knew there was going to be a backlash, or there was a potential for a backlash. But certainly it's the man who was heavily involved in the operation in London, Colonel Morovets, who's in charge of the Czech intelligence organisation in London. He made a speech many years ago where he said he was proud. Because for years, you know, people tried to distance themselves from it and say, well, I didn't have anything to do with that. I didn't realise until it was too late and this kind of thing. But Colonel Morovets stood up and said, you know, I will finally say that I gave the order for Operation Anthropoid. Yes, it cost many, many lives, but it was a glorious page in Czech history because we fought back. Sadly, it did cost lives, cost many innocent lives, but we fought back. And I think that's something that the Czech people, at a very high cost, I think they can be absolutely proud of that. And I think they become more proud as the children learn about that. And yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's something that you should be absolutely proud of taking part in and your country fighting back.
Tell us about the tours you do here in Prague, which you're doing at the moment.
My book goes all over the world. We have a Facebook group called the Mirror Court, the Sawn, and this kind of thing. And people contact me and say, oh, I'd love to see the places and da 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 da. We're out here at the moment, and we do a three-day tour, but very full days. It's 9 a.m. till 6 p.m. full on, and I'm out here. I've brought 20-odd people, most of whom I've never met. I've only been contacted on Facebook or a website that I have, or I give many lectures about Operation Anthropoid, and people come up and say, oh, I'd love to see the places, and I say, well, I'll do this tour. So we collect names, and then we come out, and we have three full days in this magnificent city. Literally crisscrossing, we go to, we start off at Nevitsi. We were there yesterday, of course. People will know that's where Gabčík and Kubiš landed. By mistake, but they still landed there. And the people there, that just the mayor comes out from the town, and they're so proud of their association there. And I've made great friends over the years. They've been very good to me. So we start off, we take the tour, and we start off going to Nevitsi, and they put a buffet on for us and welcome us. And out comes the Slivovitz at 9 o'clock in the morning. They're proud and they make us so welcome. And then we try and follow the trail as much as we can fit in 3 days. We go to Panejc Brežany, we go to Kobylisy, to Holosovice, we go to the Bolovka Hospital where Heydrich died. We go down Zenklova to see where the Novak family were and the daughter Jindriska. And we go down over to Žižkov to see where the Morovet family and Jan Zelenka lived and other safe houses in that area. We go to the Army Museum, who are great. I have a friend who works there, Zdeněk Spitalik. He's one of the historians there. He was also the historical advisor, to the new movie that's coming out, Anthropoid. And then next day we'll go out to Lidice and Kladno Gymnasium, and then we go to Petr Cech Palace. and various addresses that hid the parachutist or helped in some way, you know. And then we go to Pancrats prison. We go to St. Cyril's, obviously, in Wrestlover Street, a big part of the story. Not just a crypt, but we take time and go all the way around the church, outside in and inside. And then we go out to Radzyny Castle and to various places. And, of course, we end up at Dablitsa Cemetery, where it's thought that the bodies are in an unmarked grave. You know, we start off where they landed by parachute, Joseph Gabčík and Jan Kubiš. And then we finish on the last day where it's believed the bodies are resting. And the sad thing is, in Dablitsa, there's no marker. There's a new memorial there now, but, you know, it's believed that these people, these heroes, Czechoslovak heroes, are in the same unmarked grave as Karl Hermann Franck and Karel Čeder and other people like that. And I only wish there was some way that, I don't know, the Czech government or Ministry of Defence could actually, you know, dig these graves and do some kind of DNA and separate them. And maybe that's just me being an old romantic. But that'd be a great thing if that could ever happen.
You mentioned the movie Anthropoid. Mm-hmm. Before we started recording, you showed me a photo of yourself and the man who played Heydrich in the film.
Absolutely, yeah. The producer-director, Sean Ellis, of this new movie Anthropoid, he's been working on the story certainly a number of years before production of the movie started. I think he contacted me maybe even 4 years before even the first scene was filmed, and he was researching the story and he'd heard about me and he contacted me and got my book and kept emailing me, asking me various questions, and I was, you know, I tried to help where I could, and then he invited me to be an extra in the background of the movie. So I'm in a couple of scenes. I saw the movie last week. I went to a private screening of the movie. I'm in it for a nanosecond, but I'm on the credits as Man at Assassination. Because at the assassination scene, to be fair, he did call me over and ask for my advice and positioning of certain players in the movie. It's a great honour to be associated with Anthropoid the movie, and even more so with Operation Anthropoid. I think it's because I've been in contact with them for a number of years now. He's done a lot of work. He's certainly done his homework, as Sean Ellis. No matter what people think of the movie, I think it's great. And I don't know what the reviews are going to be when it comes out, but you can't fault him for the background work and research that he's done. I hope it'll be a blockbuster.
And do you expect there'll be more interest in the whole story and perhaps in your tours because of the movie?
Oh, no, forget my tours. I think the main thing is that these people, not just the parachutist who came back from England, but also the civilians, many of them we never even know their names, who hid them, who supplied information, supplied clothes, supplied food. I think the greatest thing that it's going to be is more publicity for this amazing act of bravery, that Prague and the Czech Republic should be absolutely proud as punch of taking part. And of course, Joseph Gabčík was from Slovakia. These people put everything on the line, you know. We have all these talks, people are saying, oh, he's a patriot and he's a da-da-da. These were absolute patriots, put everything on the line for their country. You know, even when I first started coming to Prague, the Czech people didn't necessarily know about Anthropoid, didn't know about, they may have known a Tentat or something like that. But generally speaking, they couldn't point me in the direction of safe houses or even where the attack scene happened. And if you go to Britain and speak to British people and say Operation Anthropoid, it doesn't mean anything. No one knows what it is. So anything that puts them on the map, these people and their act of bravery, I think it's fantastic.
John Martin speaking there to Radio Prague's Ian Willoughby, and now in the second part of our programme, a fresh edition of Czech Life, which will focus on good food outdoors.
It's the peak of the holiday season and thousands of people are packing up to leave the city. For those used to spending summers hiking in the mountains, holidays are forever connected with the taste of instant soups and mashes, which were lightweight and ready to eat, but didn't really have much flavour. Petra Pospěchová, a food journalist and keen mountain hiker, proves that you can climb the summits and eat well at the same time. Her outdoor cookbook, which came out just recently, features dozens of easy and tasteful recipes as well as a number of tips for less experienced travelers. When I met with Petra, I first asked her what triggered her to put together her favorite outdoor recipes.
After all the years we have been hiking and improving the recipes and finding new ingredients, I have such a big list of the recipes. And my friends always ask me how to make that, how to change this, how to improve that. So for me, it's easier to write a book than answer the questions all the time.
When I used to travel to the mountains, I was always choosing food mainly according to its weight and I have to say, it never really occurred to me that it can taste well. I never really thought about the taste.
I'm definitely sure you can keep with this criteria and keep it taste very well. There are a few, traditional ingredients you can work with. But in last years, with the boom of Asia specialties shops and health food shops, there is such a huge choice of things like soba noodles and different Asian rice noodles and pumpkin noodles and different kinds of couscous you can combine. There are different kind of various seaweeds, and you can also much easier way dry things because of the equipment. So you can dry anything from, scrambled eggs to cheese or something like that. I myself dried the blue cheese and it was awesome. It's such a marvelous ingredient and it's really light and it's really nutritious.
I was amazed at what you can actually dry. As you mentioned, scrambled eggs, then I was surprised by Brussels sprouts. It would have never occurred to me that something like that can be dried and can preserve the taste.
It's actually really lovely. I mean, part of the book is focused on the drying because the important thing in this is experience. Some of the things last for, 1 year without any harm, but the Brussels sprouts, for example, for some reason, probably some chemical process, get a bit ugly in the taste after, 5 weeks. So you have to, dry it before you go. This is the experience you get from the book. You don't have to experiment.
You actually start with quite a long sort of technical description of the equipment, but you yourself seem to swear by the sort of old-fashioned and time-proven gear. When I looked at the photos that are featured in the cookbook, there are those old aluminium
cooking pots. Yeah, I would say it's, on one hand, it's sentimental because I have this particular piece since I was six, so I cannot really imagine to just change to something which is high-tech but new. This is part of me when hiking. And honestly, it's light, the cooking is really fast, so I don't feel really need for a change. But there are, modern stuff that I really appreciate. For example, if we go in winter, it's definitely better to have this high-tech gasoline cooker because otherwise you get in real trouble when the gas bomb really freezes. So then I really appreciate the new inventions. But honestly, in most cases, I just keep with the old stuff.
After mentioning all the technical details, you move on to ingredients. You have already mentioned the drying of food. What other criteria do you follow when choosing ingredients?
Well, we talked about the weight. Other thing is that it has to be prepared quick because you really don't have time for 20 minutes, half hour. You're usually hungry. The weather is not always the best. So if the food is 5 minutes, it's perfect. If the weather is fine, 15 minutes are okay, but it's the maximum, I would say. And there is also the question how long it stays okay. For example, in summer, if we talk about any meat products, you really have to think about what to take with, because these things can twist to poison very easily. It's much easier in winter because the things don't spoil so fast. Then it's the taste. And for me, this is the like easiest thing, because to make better taste, it can be just like a little portion of some pesto, curry, pasta, something like that. Or simple spices. I mean, if I take, let's say, small box with four kind of spices, peppers, turmeric, and something else you like, it's for three or four different foods that change into real food from this non-tasting hiking stuff.
Another problem that I personally worried about when hiking in the mountains was low blood sugar. What kind of food should I take to avoid this problem?
In the Czech, we even have a special word for that. We call it hladák. And the best thing to avoid it is to eat regularly. Just don't skip the small snacks between meals. And it's definitely sugar-based food during the day. So start with big food in the morning with quite a lot of carbohydrates. And then some small snacks of this kind during the day. The same, I would say, for the lunch. And meaty things would go for the evening, because that's for regeneration. That's not for the, like, moment energy that goes from the sugar.
Mm. Also, the recipes, when you look at them, it looks like a sort of multicultural cookbook, because you use lots of different ingredients that you probably first encountered when traveling abroad.
That's true. Like, for example, this dry cheese. I experienced that for the first time in Himalayas. And when I met those, like, grannies, the local grannies, they always used dried yak cheese. And it was amazing, because it gave the food, like, special flavor. And it kind of, like, really enlightened the food. So I was like, hey, I have to try it home. And then I realized I can dry any cheese at the end of the day. If it's really fatty, it will not last forever. But, I mean, for 4 weeks, any cheese can make it if it's dried. So, and the same would be corn flour, which is very typical for the Carpathian range. The shepherds always make, they call it mamaliga. It's only water and corn flour, and they mix it together and put there the sheep cheese. And at the end of the day, they just let it stick to one piece and eat piece for the dinner. And take it for the next day. And
so basically it dries out and you can eat it, yeah, as a slice of bread or
exactly
something.
Exactly, like a cake or something like that.
Some of the recipes that are featured in your cookbook look as if they were taken from a restaurant menu. For instance, there is a wild boar stew with pears and chicken quinoa or beetroot carpaccio cheese. Did you really try them all in the outdoor conditions?
Yes, definitely. I mean, quinoa and beetroot, these are recipes I kind of intend for shorter trips, let's say 3 days. If you bake the beetroot, it can last for 2 days, and then you just cut it on the spot, add some herbs you find. And if you meet a shepherd, he gives you the cheese, and that's the story. I mean, not so much work and not so much weight. And this stew, this is our speciality for winter. We always make it with my friend Carolina for the first evening in the mountains, because the first day you usually have to walk the biggest altitude difference, and you usually are not used to walking at the moment, so you're starving the most. So we decided at the end of the first day we really deserve something nice. So we make the stew as thick as possible, just a little water, rest inside, and then we just put the snow in and make it decent food like home. So that's our start of the hiking, and then we just switch to, let's say, normal mountain food, but this is like for the first day.
Another section that I really enjoyed was the one dedicated to children's meals. Again, I guess you have drawn on your own experience from your childhood.
Very much. I mean, my parents were amazing in this. They knew we like hiking, but they also knew kids get bored easily. So We always had these like little adventures, like making potato pancakes on the hot stones. Our favorite recipe used to be snakes on the stick, which is very easy dough, just from water and flour. And you make it like long pieces and put it around the sticks, and it looks like a snake. And you make it on the fire, so the kids just love it. You know, it's ready in 5 minutes. And it's like, hey, the snakes! It's cool, I mean.
Is there any recipe out of that list that you made that you particularly like?
From the kids' recipes, I really like those making the ashes, for example. If you make the trout in the hot ashes, it's amazing. Like, no work, and in half hour you have food, like, from the Michelin restaurant. And for the kids, it's also a magic. If you make the steam pot, which is similar to the ashes baking, it's also a lesson of physics, because you put cold water on the hot stones and it makes the steam, which makes the meat, and it makes these weird sounds. I mean, the kids will love it.
And from the other recipes, is there any that you particularly like and that you perhaps have linked with some memory from your own travels?
I always like the seasonal things. So it's not about the basis of the food. It can be couscous, it can be polenta. But I really like to feel the seasons, so that's what I like for probably most of the recipes, that I can change it easily and that you can kind of like take it with the season, with the nature, because you're outside, so why to plan it all home?
And finally, some people actually believe that you should return from the mountains a little bit dirty and hungry. Would you agree with that?
I completely agree with that, because you're not going to the gastronomical trip, you're going hiking. But on the other hand, I don't think you have to starve to death or starve really hard. So that's the point of the book. Like, come on, you will starve at the end of the day, but you don't have to starve too much. So that's it, I suppose.
Food journalist Petra Pospěchová speaking there to Ruth Frankova about the delights of outdoor cooking. And I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's programme from Prague. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then please write to english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today, and take care.